I'm sure listeners want to know as well. We'd like to get an update on, you know, what's happening with Gulf restoration.
Across the Gulf?
Gulf.
Nothing at all. Nothing's happening.
Environmental justice. What's going on with chemical plants and, oil refineries and flooding and...
Lord have mercy on us all.
Is civilization going to survive? That's just what I really want to know.
It's 2018. We're still breathing one day at a time, y'all. Gulf Restoration Network, we're working in Houston after the calamity of Harvey with the Coalition for Equity, Environment, and Resilience. And if you've been listening to Democracy Now!, you've been hearing Dr. Robert Bullard, one of the intellectual generators of environmental justice, along with New Orleans' own Dr. Beverly Wright at the Deep South Center for Environmental Justice. But basically, a lot of the concerns that we had after Katrina are also concerns in Houston. Houston, you know, bigger than the state of Massachusetts, right? Or just about.
In terms
of population.
If anyone's ever driven across there, you know.
So the number of people out of housing is incredible there. The government response to Harvey, just for Houston, not to mention Port Aransas, Corpus Christi, and then, you know, I mean, the response, people are really bitter when I go there as a New Orleanian.
Oh, really?
Because they're very jealous that, you know, we had a different government in 2005 that actually responded. As crummy as that was and horrible as that was, you got to imagine this is the 45th administration. This is a whole worse version of the United States that's not responding to flood disasters.
Right.
And we're getting a little bit of that in Louisiana. That Lake Charles hasn't been responded to from Lake Charles's rain after Harvey. But there's just no response. It's an abyss. And I know the situation in Puerto Rico, oh my God. I mean, it's taking me back to those days after Katrina of, you know, being in a Tyvek suit for weeks on end, running after the Red Cross truck for food. I can't imagine, you know, that response. The response isn't even to what it was after Katrina in Houston. So, you know, think about our brothers and sisters in Houston and across coastal Texas trying to find a response. And so far, the government response has been very... has been interesting. I think Houston, as well as Baton Rouge, after the floods of 2016, right, because we had those big rains in 2016 across Louisiana, mm-hmm. wasn't a named storm, but mm-hmm. it's that hot, hot Gulf of Mexico putting all that water into the air, and it comes down on us, onto our homes. And if our homes are slab on grade, which they are in Houston and Baton Rouge, then we're more likely to flood. Passing floodplain ordinances, basic stuff like try not to fill the floodplain to displace water and put it on other people. I think that's what people from Baton Rouge call us about the most, is that, hey, I live in this subdivision, and our stormwater has been engineered a certain way, and now they're going to put a new subdivision next to us in the wetlands, and it's going to push all that water onto us. Because, you know, the engineers for the subdivision will engineer the development to deal with the water on that parcel of land. But, you know, the moment you cross off the property boundary, it's like the water doesn't exist anymore. But, of course, we all know it gets pushed downhill.
Yeah, it reminds me in a way, it's a larger way of the flooding in La Paz after which tropical storm it was, and all of, because the levees have been strengthened around New Orleans, it just pushed all the surge up into La Paz. So the water has to go. The water always has to go somewhere. So somebody's always going to get flooded, I guess you get further up, you know, into the north where the water can trickle out. But pretty horrifying. It's horrifying that there's not very much response, so, given your championship.
Governments in Houston and Baton Rouge are trying to get a handle on this through floodplain ordinances, mm-hmm. right? I think at Gulf Restoration Network, we've always seen that's a great idea, along with kind of wetlands rehabilitation in the area, rather than solely relying on giant engineered mega projects. So Houston is also looking at that, too. It's called the Coastal Spine or the Ike Dike. Mm-hmm. They want to build a wall across the Gulf of Mexico on the sea to deal in response to a heavy rain. It doesn't quite make sense. We're very concerned because those kinds of coastal barriers can really, you know, destroy the ecosystem of the estuary. Mm-hmm. I think the Indian River Lagoon in Florida is a historically a well-known example of you cut off the flow to the bay and all the fish go away, right? And then all your dolphins suffer because as the top predator there's no food anymore. You know, so all the fishermen in, you know, the bay would be against it. And it wouldn't necessarily solve the problem of either coastal flooding, or it certainly wouldn't do anything, and it might even make the response to catastrophic rains worse, because those rains have to now get out. So we're highly skeptical of these coastal barriers that are being proposed for Texas. But I think, you know, I think the biggest concerns, which you may have heard from Tejas or the Sierra Club, Juan Parras, Brian Parras, who have been our compadres in Houston for a long time, generation, a family fighting for environmental justice and labor rights. You know, you'll hear from them concerns about the Houston Ship Channel and just the amount of oil storage in that channel that is vulnerable to surge, right? If we all remember Murphy Oil trying to get back into Chalmette after Katrina. One of my aunt's friends has a story of his silver cross turned black when he tried to get into Chalmette because of all of the sulfur in the air after Katrina. And Murphy Oil, what a calamity. Well, there's probably about, you know, I don't know, I want to say about 20 times the amount of oil storage in the Houston Ship Channel. So there is a reason to be concerned about surge from Galveston Bay. But that's so far up in the estuary. You know, that's like Hammond compared to... and then if you put a wall on a Wrigley's, flooding is still going to happen in Hammond. Mm-hmm. Because just the volume of water in Lake Pontchartrain itself is going to be moved by the wind. They call it slosh, right? Mm-hmm. You have your bowl full of water, mm-hmm. and you move it around, it's still going to flood the vulnerable areas. So we remain concerned about all that oil storage up in Houston, but the companies themselves really need to guard their own facilities rather than, because you can't rely on a coastal barrier 90 miles away from your facility to protect your facility. But I think, you know, I don't know. The most heartbreaking stories recently... Oh, I guess moving east across the Gulf, we've had some great victories. We have an unprecedented court victory in the Atchafalaya Basin. Against the Bayou Bridge pipeline, where a judge agreed with us that construction of that pipeline needed to stop because the pipeline, as it is constructed through the Atchafalaya Basin, diverts sediment away from the coast and into the deep swamps. We have, you know, a beautiful, gorgeous river of swamps in the Atchafalaya Basin. It's the last good forest left of that ecosystem. And used to go all the way to Illinois. You know, when you think about the ancient, well, not so ancient, it was more 1200, but, you know, the prehistorical, anyway, Americans, people called them Mississippians, the Mound cultures, the people that built these great cities in Cahokia and Poverty Point, you know, they all lived in that very fertile, rich with fish ecosystem that once went all the way up to Illinois. The last bit left is in our state, in Louisiana. And we still have crawfishermen that do wild harvest all throughout the basin. So Our organization is partnered with them in a group called the Chafalaya Basin Keeper, as well as the National Water Keepers and the Delta Chapter of Sierra Club, trying to protect it from the sedimentation issues and keeping these pipelines from robbing the sediment that would otherwise flow to our coast. And I don't know if you know, but the Wax Lake outlet down on the coast below the basin is one of the like only positive stories we have for the river being able to get sediment out there. So we needed to keep doing that as sea level rises, rather than altering the flows and stopping the sediment with these pipelines. The company just doesn't care. They just didn't address this stuff.
Yeah, what do you think made the difference in the judge's decision to support your injunction to stop the pipeline?
Well, I think with the regulators, we're not able to have a scientific discussion, and I think the court allows for a much richer description of fact. Regulators are under pressure from our elected officials, who are often very resistant to information.
That would be like the LDEQ or DEQs.
Well, in this case, it's the federal regulator, the Army Corps of Engineers. Mm-hmm. So they're more sensitive to our senators. And they, well, the company, in fact, hired our former Senator Mary Landrieu to stump for them. so you can see this company is very powerful as well. But the Army Corps is responsive to our senators. They're not so responsive to science. So we were able to, you know, because the basin is this national jewel, international jewel.
And a lot of tourism there and scrap tourism and all that.
It's so fertile.
So sportsman's paradise.
It is the sportsman's paradise. It's the beating heart.
We'd have to change our motto in Louisiana. If Chafalaya went away, we'd have to be like, I don't know, like... The oil company's paradise.
It really is one of a kind, and it's only an hour and a half from New Orleans, so if you're a New Orleanian, I deeply encourage you to go to Bayou Pigeon and launch a canoe and see it. It doesn't take long. People, you know, most of the recreational facilities are on the west side, closer to Lafayette, so New Orleanians think, oh, it takes 3 hours to get there. No. It's shorter to get there.
It is. I've been through it many times. Does the Gulf Restoration Network provide tours or anything?
That would be cool.
I want to go on a canoe with Scott Eustace.
I want
to see the Scott tour of the Atchafalaya, Atchafalaya Basin.
Well, maybe I should get out of this nonprofit game and start an eco-tour business. But I've definitely thought about it. But I should represent. Atchafalaya Basin Keeper does work with a tour company, and I forget their name at the moment, but yes, go to the Atchafalaya Basin Keeper website, and you'll find out about the best eco-tour of the basin, and that is from the east side, so it is close to New Orleans, so please go out and see it. It is a reminder of the ancient world back before Europeans, and even before the Natchez, right? It's a cool place. Well, and then moving east, I think we have some sad news about the New Orleans Council decision to move forward with Entergy's gas plant, despite highly emotional and widespread opposition. What can you say? Our organization is a water organization, so we're very concerned with the groundwater use for cooling for the proposed plant. In the past, it was much larger, right? The old Michoud plant, which was much more of a stinker than this one. And I think the fact that there is that this new plant is not nearly as much of a belcher as the old plant kind of won the council over. But I think, you know, when we think about groundwater and subsidence in New Orleans East, which has the most subsidence on a scale that's radically more than the rest of the city, there's only one way to go, is down.
Right.
And once it goes down, you can't lift it back up. So any groundwater extraction is something that needs to be looked at, and groundwater extraction, I would say, is not regulated I talked to the head of the Louisiana Groundwater Commission about this issue, and you know, he said that, well, there's nothing stopping Chalmette Refinery, any industrial operator, from just sticking a well underneath their facility and taking the groundwater for coolant water. The state groundwater regulations are voluntary, which I don't know.
Sounds
if that means
familiar.
Voluntary regulations.
Self-regulating. It works really well for me with M&Ms. I don't think I need a restraining order between me and M&Ms.
Well, God bless Chalmette Refinery for not extracting groundwater. I think what we had was a NASA study in 2016 that came out and said, you know what? It's groundwater extraction in New Orleans East. It only happens in New Orleans East. It is moving that area, Village de Est, New Orleans East, Little Woods, places that are, you know, overwhelmingly Asian American and African American. It's moving it in the wrong direction if we want to keep New Orleans afloat. Mm-hmm. That area also has several federal projects, important, you know, multi-million dollar levee projects, and perhaps even the surge barrier is within the area of influence. Their study, NASA's study, was from the satellites, right? So they can only look above the ground. We don't have enough but what we see from the satellites is pretty alarming enough to warrant caution. What we needed from the council was to say, hey, Entergy, you need to apply for a permit of, you know, how you're impacting the federal levy, you know, and this groundwater question needs to be answered with geotechnical investigation. You know, this is an issue where we need the regulated utility to have care. There's no other entity, there's no other body that would regulate Entergy or would regulate groundwater. So we're kind of, I mean, it's not the best that this is left to the council. You know, ideally, the council could pass a law that says, you know, we should
sure.
establish a groundwater district.
Community rights. They could uphold community rights.
Well, they could establish a regulatory body with the technical expertise to deal with the groundwater issue. Mm-hmm. That's not very popular in our climate, I guess. But, I mean, that would be the appropriate thing. I mean, Houston did I know we always go back to what Houston does, but Houston did a similar thing decades ago because of their subsidence issues. So we're going to be, now that they've approved this, it just opens up a whole lot of worms.
Sure. Like what's next?
What's next is responding. Council Member Gray has not been the wisest on his way out. He's been, another motion that he has is to rezone a lot of the business park areas in the east as light industrial, and a lot of these areas are wetlands. So as a wetland group, we're opposed to that. Effectively, it's a rezoning. It's called a text change in the zoning. So it's just converting all of the business parks. Business park is a zoning thing that mm-hmm. only exists mm-hmm. in New Orleans mm-hmm. East, but converting them all to light industrial. So we'll have a petition on our website to defend those wetlands out in New Orleans East, especially in light of the recent decision to put more burden on our brothers and sisters in the east. So we definitely need to protect those wetlands because that keeps those communities drier by taking the water away. So look for that petition on our website, healthygulf.org. We'll be there. We're fighting for your trees. We're trying to keep the water where it needs to be and not on your houses. Please check us out.
Thank you so much for coming in, Scott. And there was one other win I read about the other day, that there was a court decision that awarded damages to folks who were impacted by the Moulton School that was built on an industrial waste plant. And so they were awarded. It was a small sum of money, but at least it was an acknowledgement that school should never have been built there and put children's lives at risk.
So. Was the Deep South Center for Environmental Justice or Monique Hardin involved in that?
I'm sure she was. And Wilma Subro, you know, they also fought for the Booker T. Washington School to be
So if people are interested, here's some news. I mean, today and tomorrow is the Tulane Environmental Law Summit, and I do believe my favorite attorney and yours, Monique Hardin, fight Monique.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. That's silly. But I honestly, Monique Hardin has taught me so much about environmental law, federal law, even civil rights implications of environmental injustice. She's a fountain of knowledge, and she'll be presenting, I believe, on this school issue on the Tulane campus at Winneman Hall, either today or tomorrow. I forget. So if anybody is interested in those, in that very question, come on uptown, and we'd be happy to see you.
Great. And then lastly, the Green Army. What's happening with
the Green Army efforts.
What have they got? Is there any legislation?
The Green Army, yes, is a statewide body dealing with legislative advocacy in Baton Rouge. I work for a 501c3, so I'm not as up on that stuff. But I will be talking to General Honore, who's the leader of that movement, and he's speaking to the Orleans Sierra Club in the Dominion Room at Audubon this Sunday evening. I believe it starts at 6 this Sunday. If you want the legislative update, what's new, I could tell you the thing I'm following is Bodie White up in is up to some shenanigans. So we might look for a petition from us.
No surprise there.
To protect our rivers. His district is a weird district, and it's only on scenic rivers. So he does not like the scenic rivers program that protects our recreational rivers in Louisiana. So we will be probably in discussions with him about why the waters of the North Shore need to be protected.
Just have to check his accounts and see who's putting money into it.
Well, I think he's a real estate kind of guy. I think it's like that kind of story. So.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for these updates. We're going to get started with Democracy Now!, and I'll be reading calendar events throughout the next hour. It's really great to see you back here, and don't be a stranger.
Thanks, Jan.